Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, yeah, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Dinner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by our great friends, makers of delicious beer, down at 50 West Brewing Company. It's a road edition. It's officially over the inner tubes edition. I'm Paul Dinner Jr. My partner Fletcher Page is on the ground in beautiful, beautiful Mobile, Alabama. How is Mobile?
Well, it's not freezing cold, but you know, it's not. It wasn't high up on my list of places to visit, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, once you get out in the town, what you know, you realize all that it has to offer, in terms of dilapidated housing, and although some very nice etouffee can be found. I must say, if you know where you're looking, you can get some good Southern cooking.
Yes.
You got that going for you.
I got the realization of all that I don't have to offer Mobile, myself personally. So except for maybe to be able to take down some of its seafood. Other than that, I don't think that Mobile will have much use for me.
No. But there's plenty of reason to be down. So you're down there. The Senior Bowl is going on. And that means the NFL world, particularly the NFL drafting world, sort of congregates around Ladd Peeble Stadium. It's just as prestigious as you could ever imagine. How's the blog boy community doing?
Man, there was a lot going on today. It's a funny environment where you can sort of walk by James Franklin or John Gruden will randomly break news without being prompted. So there's a lot of Reese's peanut butter cups laying around.
Dude, did you talk to Cuppy? Did you get a picture with Cuppy?
I should have got a picture with. There was multiple Reese's mascots. Which is that's an economy I did not know existed until today.
No, Cuppy the Reese's Pieces mascot is a crowd favorite at the Senior Bowl, and always one. I get a picture with them every year because I love mascots. I love obscure mascots. I did not realize there were multiple. It's usually just Cuppy. Is there another one?
Yeah, there was a second mascot, and that was I noticed a strong presence of Hershey's and other. Actually, to be honest with you, I busted into the hospitality room of a mortgage company, and I helped myself to an Almond Joy and coffee, and these three random guys were looking at me funny, and I waved to them and walked out, and then I looked on the wall, and it was a meeting for a mortgage company. So
you just busted in.
I just went in there and got
all their snacks, rolled out and waved. At least you waved.
I did.
You were nice about it. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Bengals world right now down there. Of a lot to get to, but let's start with you down there. You had talked to Duke Tobin and Darren Simmons.
Who else? Who all is down there? Because it's a weird situation because everyone was saying, well, we don't know who's going to go. The staff was basically that is been technically retained at the moment was given the option to go or to stay back in Cincinnati. But with the Rams winning and Zach Taylor coaching, it means another 2 weeks. So there's no press conference. There's no invites, gauntlet, or anything like that happening back to Cincinnati. So some went, some stayed behind. Who have you seen and who is down there?
Okay, so I'm going to run through this chronologically. I arrived early this morning, and seriously, on the very front row centered was like 10 scouts and people from the Bengals player or personnel department. The weigh-in segment of this show is a little bit bizarre. Seriously, it's like
the weigh-in is disgusting.
What it's there was like 300 people just intently sitting there watching dudes without a lot of clothes on get their height and weight taken. And it was very serious. I almost felt like I didn't want to talk to anybody around me because people were very intent. But the Bengals had it. They had their whole entire scouting department on the very front row, Duke Tobin included. They were right there. And I wrote a story about how it's while there's a lot of weird circumstances not having your head coach in place, not having an offensive or defensive coordinator officially named, the scouting department is business as usual down here. They're going to do what they do. They're doing their jobs like they would any other year. So that's how the thing started for me. That's what I saw first.
Yeah. Duke, we know Darren Simmons. We know that, we get into his lieutenants, Mike Potts, Steven Radicevich, and all the way down. As far as staff goes, though, there's a lot of still hanging out there. You mentioned John Gruden breaking news. So this had been put out there, but obviously no one really willing to confirm anything until John Gruden, who's coaching in the Senior Bowl, just offers up, yep, our quarterback's coach, Brian Callahan, is going to be the offensive coordinator of the Bengals. You're welcome. And so we're off and running on that.
Right. Yeah. So we did get to speak to Duke after the weigh-in. We talked to him for about 15 minutes. This was before John Gruden broke news, but obviously the organization's not going to make any comments about Zach Taylor or any other ongoing hires, probably until after the Super Bowl. But it was kind of weird with Gruden. He's got a certain way about him, as I think everybody knows, the way he was on broadcasts and some of those ESPN quarterback shows. I mean, he's always entertaining. But he actually wasn't asked about Brian Callahan as it relates to being an offensive coordinator. He was just asked, like, how Brian had done this season. Obviously, whoever asked that question was maybe sort of poking around at this. But, John just came right out with it. He didn't even answer the question about how Brian has been. He just said, I've got some news to deliver. Brian's no longer with us. He's going off to be the offensive coordinator with the Bengals. So that just sort of came unexpectedly. We did not expect to get that confirmed by somebody else somewhere out there, and it just happened to be John Gruden, who's coaching the North squad here this week.
So let's talk about Brian Callahan, because most people listening to this right now are saying, who the hell is Brian Callahan, right? He kind of comes a bit off the radar as far as who you might have pegged to be in this Bengals OC position. But really, he sounds a whole lot like Zach Taylor when you really look at his background and who he is. I mean, he's been an assistant mostly in the quarterback area for a few years. He's got 9 years in the league. He actually was at UCLA the same time as Steven Radicevich, who I mentioned earlier, who is a part of the Bengals scouting staff. They were all right there in that 06-07 area of time at UCLA. But so he was a assistant on the Broncos staff from 2010 till 2015. So there's a couple of Super Bowl trips in there. He was quarterback's coach for them in the 2015 team that made their run to the Super Bowl and beat Carolina. then parlayed that into two seasons as quarterback's coach for the Lions. Oh, by the way, Matt Stafford's two best seasons as a pro. So he has quickly made a name for himself. He's a younger guy. He's a QB specialist. And so you add that to a which there seems to be a lot of those guys showing up in the building now. A lot of guys who think they're going to know how to work with Andy Dalton are all in the room together. But that's kind of some background on Brian Callahan. But most notably is that he is the son of Bill Callahan, offensive line coach currently for the Washington Redskins, renowned as one of the best offensive line coaches in football. Bengals recently with an O-line coach opening as Frank Pollock was let go. So a natural to say perhaps the son is going to bring the father with him to possibly take over as O-line coach. That's got to be in play.
Right, and the Redskins would have to agree to that.
Yep.
So that's sort of the hitch there. I mean, I think, though, you can't let a guy like Frank Pollock go without knowing that. And you don't want a 35-year-old first-time head coach and a 34-year-old first-time OC without at least knowing that you're going to have somebody like Bill Callahan or maybe Mike Sherman, just floating that out there, somebody, a strong veteran presence, if not on that offensive line, but somewhere on the offensive side of the ball. So I'm just sort of connecting some dots there. But that seems to be the way it's going to shake out.
Mike Sherman. So we've talked a little bit about him since Zach Taylor was mentioned, because it's the family connection there. It's his father-in-law, coach of the Montreal Alouettes right now. So the odds of him coming down here, I don't know. Here's what we know. We reached out to the Montreal Alouettes and their sports information director, Francis DuPont.
Are you going to put him on blast like that?
I'm putting Francis on blast. It's time to go. Let's go, right? And so Francis DuPont said, hey, yeah, he'd hook us up with a chat with Bill Callahan. That was, of course, right when Zach Taylor was hired. With Mike Sherman. Well, that quickly disappeared. We don't know if Francis is still with us or alive.
Radio silence from my man Francis. Because we got off to such a strong start. And here's the thing. I just imagine if for Francis, he gets my email and he's so excited that somebody from Cincinnati wants to familiarize themselves with the Alouettes and get some publicity out there for Montreal. I want to talk to him about Mike, and I would have liked to have heard that conversation between Fran and Mike. I'm sure Fran's busted in.
We've officially gone Fran. We've gone Fran with him.
That's right. Got a major Metro Daily newspaper man. He wants to talk to you, Mike. And Mike, I'm sure, explained to him exactly what was going on. Because here's the thing. I was looking for background on Zach Taylor. That's all I was doing. But the truth is, I'm sure Mike Sherman's thinking, I might have a job lining up here. So he's obviously not going to talk to a schlep like me. And he's going to, you know, keep his radio silence because he could possibly be in play for this offensive line job. So I'm no hard feelings towards Fran or Mike. But that was an interview I would have liked to have had.
Yeah. So it's becoming quite a little family experience here. Very fast. You know,
the Taylors, we could end the Callahans.
We've got a couple of very prominent 90s media where we're talking about the Taylors. I mean, we're basically in Home Improvement at this point. You've got the whole Taylor clan, Tim the Tool Man and Brad and Randy. And then we've got Callahan Auto. We could have Roland. I feel like we'd get the Callahan Auto shirts going. You know, I feel bad for my man Optimistic Bobby, who was a big fan of Laser Cats. Him and his son would take all their stuffed cats to the game, and they really tried to get Laser Cats going. It didn't happen. But now I feel like the next run is Callahan Auto. Is what they get. If they can get both Callahans going on the offensive side of the ball, Taylors and the Callahans, is that hopefully it doesn't end up like the Capulets and the Montagues, right? You worry when you get too many families together, you could end up with a war.
Well, that's true, and I do think that nepotism, it can be charming in the infant stages, but you know, it is a little, in all seriousness, it's a little bit worrisome if the offense didn't work out and you had to fire your brother, or if the offensive line didn't work out and you had to fire your old college coach. It's kind of weird. But I understand that football is a game where people have ties and connections, and that's just the way it goes, and I understand it's a business. But maybe – I don't know if you want it to be too incestuous.
Yeah. We still don't know if Press Taylor is going to get involved. It doesn't appear to be the case.
Doesn't seem that way. Yeah.
It seems like he might be staying put in Philadelphia, which is a good – you know, obviously a good spot for him. But anyway, so that's where – that is that. I want to say one last thing about Callahan Auto real quick before we just move on. I really like this way more than I would have liked Daryl Bevel, right? Or insert veteran grizzled offensive coordinator here. I'm all for Jack Del Rio, which I think we all believe that that's where this is going to land on the defensive side of the ball. We've been telling you that. He's been the top of our defensive coordinator tracker since day one. Although the Nationals will have you believe that they just broke that shit wide open and we had no clue. But, you know, Nate Sander here or there. But here's the thing. If you are going to have young, new school, offensive mind head coach, why would you not want to have young, new school, offensive-minded, offensive coordinator? Why would you want to get that all mixed up with somebody who's more of an old school type of guy when that's not who your head coach is? That's not who his offense is. I say bring him in, let the kids cook stuff up and run with that rather than have some veteran. You need veteran people in the building. Darren Simmons, Jack Del Rio, I think can be your anchors in that way. But it never made much sense for me not to pair Zach Taylor with somebody of the like, in an OC position. So I like this actually, especially if you get veterans, somebody with a whole lot of NFL experience on the staff in the most important spot, like an O-line coach. So I think it all would play together pretty well.
I totally agree, 100%. And I didn't. Whenever we were doing some of the speculation, you know, and you say, well, maybe Gary Kubiak or somebody, like you said, a veteran comes along to help out. I was like, well, how do you build an offense like that? I mean, that's why you brought Zach Taylor in. So I agree. The Wade Phillips model is the way it goes. Maybe it's John Fox or Jack Del Rio. We'll have to see how that plays out on the other side of the ball, but I 100% agree with everything you said.
Yeah. So as far as where the Zach Taylor thing is at, I mean, he's the guy, and we now have to wait two more weeks as the Rams make the Super Bowl in a insane weekend of games, but also an insane game for the Rams, insane win in the Superdome, thanks to the officials. But hey, you know what? When you want to talk about where you can see a quarterback coach's impact on a player, I think it's calm and execution when things are going haywire in the most intense situations. And I got to tell you, with their backs against the wall at the end of the first half, the drive that they put together to pull within a field goal, and then, obviously, the way late in the game in a lot of pressure situations, the drives made by Jared Goff, who just seemed totally in control and understanding of everything. That has to reflect back onto your quarterback's coach and your entire offensive staff. And I know there's a lot of, okay, we're kind of getting very granular here, but, I mean – if you're looking for impact, if you're looking at where can you maybe see some of Zach Taylor's influence, stuff like that, I think is part of where you see some of that.
Yeah, and I go back to something that Carson Palmer told me And I know that the majority of that conference called. Yeah, that doesn't need to be brought back up. But he did say, when we talked about the trend of young offensive coaches being elevated to head coaching spots, he said, we're about to find out what kind of coach Sean McVay really is. He said that before the playoffs started. And when you're down 13-0 on the road in New Orleans in the first quarter, I think we certainly found out, like you said, what kind of coach Sean McVay is and what kind of culture maybe he's established there with the Rams.
Yeah, you're right. And I find that interesting. So we'll go the Bengals with the opportunity to do a, quote, second interview this week. Of course, Miami doing the same with Brian Flores from the Patriots. And then what we will see is the Rams will play in the Super Bowl there that Sunday in February. And then likely that Monday or Tuesday we'll have an official release sent out by the team announcing Zach Taylor's the head coach. A couple days later, there'll be a press conference down at Paul Brown Stadium. Not soon after that, I imagine the majority of the staff will probably be announced. More press conferences shall follow. And then we'll have everything back together. But when in actuality, a lot of it's kind of been in place for a while now, or at least the idea of it. It's just a matter of the execution and everybody going with ink to paper. I think you get the verbal agreements of this when you hear John Gruden say he's not here anymore, he's coaching the Bengals. That's where everybody is at with this, even though nothing has officially been signed yet.
Right. And so then I guess as far as the rest of the staff that I saw that today, Darren Simmons was here. Safeties coach Robert Livingston was here. I saw him. But also, Bill Lazor was here, Kyle Kasky, Jonathan Hayes, some of those guys that were not retained. They had already booked their trips. They had all their stuff set up to be here. And so Cincinnati, the Bengals, honored those commitments and still paid for those guys to be down here. So they were kind of floating around as well. So that was going on today. That was I guess you'd say it was interesting to kind of see how that played out. But I did think that was, I don't want to say it was nice, but the Bengals did kind of honor some commitments that they had.
Hey, not only are they honoring commitments, they're honoring contracts. I mean, these guys were under contract. They're still getting paid. It's like that's part of it. I think it all kind of goes along together. With this whole change, it is an odd dynamic floating out there. I mean, the Senior Bowl, just as a background for people that don't know, I mean, the Senior Bowl is very much a networking setup for the NFL coaching community. There's a lot of coaches down there that either have gigs they're unhappy in, or have new gigs they're attempting to get, or are free agents out there looking for a place to land. And in whether you're talking about in the restaurants or late night in the bars or the afternoons at lunches or wherever or in the hotels, these coaches are all networking with each other because this is coaching carousel season right now. And that's the Senior Bowl is kind of a place where that tends to go down. So a lot of Bengals coaches in the mix there former Bengals coaches, potentially current ones, dropping lines like, hey, if Zach Taylor comes in and he points at me and said, you, I don't like your face and get out of here, they got to be prepared for that, because there's nothing official about the guys that are on the currently expected to be retained list until it's official. That's the thing. I mean, until it's, hey, this is our staff, this is how we're going, it's just – we think this is how it's going to go, but nothing is official until that guy gets in here and formulates his entire group.
Yeah, and just from a couple conversations that I overheard or had today, with the Bengals still up in the air, but not really, and the Dolphins still up in the air, but not really, there's a lot of moves, and guys are sort of holding their breath or wondering because, some guys might have connections maybe to the Los Angeles Rams. They're going to have to fill some spots, and it just go each move. Just has sort of a domino effect, and there's a lot of people that are just sort of waiting on some of these last final spots to be filled out in terms of head coaching roles to see where maybe they could end up. So
yeah,
still a lot to play out.
This is the business they have chosen, and this is how it goes. You know, everybody is hired to be fired, and when you look at the resumes of these coaches, it always amazes me that how much everyone moves around so much and always has to be trying to find another spot. Unlike people like you and me, Fletcher, we're here at the Inquirer for life. For you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've never faced layoffs and job instability in the media.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, so here's what I want to do next. Just because, you know, the Bengals as a front office have kind of gone into the bunker a little bit since before Marvin Lewis' situation went down. So Duke Tobin sort of surfacing and speaking today. I mean, you can attest to this, Fletcher. You were there. Was pretty good, right? I mean, it sounds like not that it was. I wouldn't use the word revealing, but interesting to hear his take on a lot of topics, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we talked about how they're holding things together during this moment. We talked about Andy Dalton, and we also talked about just this process of making a coaching change, a transition between Marvin Lewis to Zach Taylor, and maybe what that means in terms of structural changes or just a significant cultural change, and maybe how Zach Taylor and new coaches and new voices, new perspectives, how that might change some things with the organization.
All right, so let's bring in this is going to be about 16 minutes. We're going total raw, unedited here. The full interview with Duke Tobin and a small contingent of Bengals reporters down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama.
I guess just to start it off, what's this week going to be like for you guys? I know you've got your full staff in terms of scouts, but just not having all the assistants and all the coaching staff and assembled yet, what's this week look like for you guys, maybe differently than years past?
I don't know that it'll be dramatically different. Most of the stuff's on tape, and we go back and we look at the tape. That's where we get most of our opinion from. You get to see them live, you get to talk to them here a little bit, and our scouts will handle that just well, as they always do. So I don't think it'll be dramatically different. We'll have a contingent of some coaches down here. But really, the opportunity to talk to them, see them in person, and then the tape that we'll get from this will be the most important thing.
Gotcha.
So there'll be time to catch up for sure.
I guess it's kind of a rarity. You've usually had a staff in place, usually at this game.
Well, with our past staff, we had a lot of continuity, and we felt like it was worth their time coming down to see the guys and be around them. The more you can be around them, the better opinion you'll have. But it's for the scouts, it's business as usual. And that's the way we're handling it.
Is it not knowing who the staff is? Is it hard? Is it? You're just basically doing reports, I guess. You're not trying to fit somebody into a hole yet, I guess.
Yeah, well, with scouting, everybody, it doesn't matter what staff you have, everyone's looking for the same thing. They want guys that love football. There won't be any coach that walks into our building that asks for somebody that doesn't like football. They want aggressive guys. They want instinctive guys. They want guys who are physically able to hold up. I wouldn't assume that we're going to bring somebody in that doesn't like big, that doesn't like fast, that doesn't like explosive. If you're looking at a receiver, if he doesn't catch the ball, you're not going to find a coach that says, give me that guy. So scouting is we're all looking for the same thing. And so the whole of fitting somebody in here or there, we're evaluating the individual traits that these guys have, and we can cross those other bridges when we come to them. Really, the art of scouting is what deficiencies do you accept? Because everybody has deficiencies. And everybody's looking for the same positives. And then what deficiencies are you willing to accept, whether it's a little bit lack of size or a little bit of lack of speed or a little bit of lack of strength? What deficiencies are you are you willing to accept? And when you get to that point, then we'll bring our staff on board and see what they're doing.
Do those deficiencies come through a little more obvious in a situation like this, as opposed to just watching?
Well, I think some of the small school guys, you get to see them on a bigger stage against guys that are maybe a little better than they played against on a, you know, a weekly basis during the college season. So it's good to see the small school guys here. And then with the bigger school guys, you want to see, you know, who can learn quickly, who can be comfortable in a new environment. Who can thrive with different coaching, you know, can they take their teaching out to the field, can they absorb the playbook, are they out of sorts? And so that gives you a little glimpse maybe of how long it'll take the guy, you know, in your building to contribute.
Do you remember a case in the past where a small school guy really kind of jumped on your radar?
Oh, there, yeah. I mean, there's. I don't know that they jump on our radar. There's no secrets down here. We know all the guys that walked across the stage, but you just get to see them against bigger, stronger people. And maybe you had a question as to whether they could hold up physically against, you know, a guy across from them that's a little bit bigger, a little stronger, a little faster. Sometimes you, the small school guys, they look like they can run on game tape. But you're not sure who they're running against, so you can never know until you get that benchmark. But yeah, there have been guys that have come down here and done well and shown that they belong, you know, that they could have played at Alabama, or they could have played at Georgia, or they could play in the SEC or the ACC or, you know, the Pac-12, you know, that maybe they just didn't get the chance, or they were a late developer. And some guys come down and show that they're a little bit off, you know, that it's a big jump for them and they're going to take some time.
What traits are you trying to add to the roster? What do you think you guys need to add?
Oh, I think the game's getting faster. So on defense, I think we're going to be looking for speed. Which we always are. We're never looking for slow, but, you know, that's going to be a focus of what we do. We want guys that can run, that can cover. The game's becoming a passing game. So you want guys that can cover on the two back levels, you know, that can run, that have some flexibility to them, that have a feel in coverage, because that's such a vital component of the game that we play right now. And you're always looking for guys on the lines. You know, guys that are quick, explosive, fast, sudden, strong, guys that can gain position on their opponents out of their stance. So, you know, we're always looking on both line of scrimmages. You just can never have enough big guys. And so we'll be focused there. We'll be focused on speed, on defense.
Any position groups you're trying to add? Anything you got to think you're going to focus
on? You know, I think we're going to have probably 11 picks. Is what we're projecting. So it's probably going to be hard not to add somebody at each position group. It's just the order that you do it and the importance you put on it.
Is there any group you might want to add a couple, or maybe two or three?
Yeah. You know, I would say that there's probably a group of two that we might double up on. Again, you can never have enough line. And so both offensive and defensive. I think in the linebacker core, we'd like to have a couple of good young ones, you know, coming on board. And, you know, if those guys can run and cover, that would be helpful to where we were last year.
So many of the top-tier guys coming out are usually underclassmen. Is there a position group that's kind of top-heavy with seniors, with guys that are going to be here this week?
I don't know about guys that are going to be here this week. It looks like it's shaping up to be a pretty good defensive line draft for sure. But there's guys at every position group that really are, and we're not finalized with all the juniors that just came out. We've got a good idea on 80% of them, and then we're still doing some work on some of the other guys. So in terms of the total depth of the draft, that'll be a process that we'll go through in the next couple months, and we'll have a real good feel for where we might be able to find value in the later rounds, you know, where guys will last a little longer because there's so many of them.
What do you think about the senior group of quarterbacks?
They're interesting. It doesn't appear that, you know, there's going to be a Peyton Manning of the group. but they each have some traits that are interesting. There's some guys with size. There's some guys that lack size. There's some guys with arm strength. The thing that we look for more than anything is accuracy and anticipation. And I think there are some guys that have that in this draft. But again, it doesn't look like a top-heavy draft at that position right now as we sit here.
What are you guys on Andy? It doesn't sound like you're looking for a successor in Andy.
Oh, we're very comfortable with Andy. We think he's got a number of years left. We feel like we can win with him. But with any position group, we don't just throw away the whole draft board at a group just because we're satisfied with who we have. We'll evaluate them, look at them, and see if there's an opportunity to add a guy at every group.
I don't know how much you can talk about specific prospects here, but there's two kids from Cincinnati, at West Virginia linebacker in the UK, safety.
They'll be local guys for us. We'll get to know them really well throughout the course of the process. We already know them pretty well, and it's exciting to see them here. It's good for the city. It's good for the high school programs around to get guys that bubble up to this level. I'm excited to see how they do this week.
You said it's pretty much business as usual for the scouts. For you personally, not just this week, but this whole process, how challenging has it been? How different has it been with everything kind of in limbo?
Well, for our scouts, it's been as usual. They've been focused on the college game. They're focused on some of the free agency thing. They're doing what they always do. For me personally, and the ownership group, we've been covered up with some other things that maybe have put me behind the curve a little bit at this time, but I got plenty of time to catch up for sure, and I got a lot of faith in the guys that we have working on it full time. So for those guys, the transition that we're going through hasn't affected their workload at all, and that's been by design. We want them focused on what we're going to be doing, both in the draft, free agency, our own players. So I feel like we'll be fine. Okay.
How many other scouts and coaches here are like pumping you for information and want to know what's going to happen?
Everybody's curious, but at the same time, we just keep them focused on what they're here to do. Everybody's curious.
It looks like it's going to be pretty significant, just given the changes in coaches. It looks like it's going to be a significant sea change.
There are, and the guys that we bring in, we'll rely on their input as well through the process. We like our coaches to be involved in the process, to feel good about their involvement and their say in what's going on. We want, when we bring a new player on board, however we bring them on board, we want everybody on board with that. We want everybody to have a chance to weigh in on it. If we have real splits in opinions, we try to work through those, get everybody on board, and if we're still split at the end, then we go different directions, because we want the guy, when he walks in the building, to have the best chance of success possible, and you do that by having everybody on board with the guy when he comes in the building.
So you don't see any structural changes in the way you do it, in the way you do it with the...
No. We'll involve the new coaching staff and the new coaches, whoever we have in the building in the process.
The same way.
We don't want to take away from their ability to work on football, work on schematics, work on playbook, those types of things. So they'll have plenty of time to do that, but we'll involve them in the process, try to get them up to speed and see what their opinions are when we hit the draft time. There's plenty of time. It's a static finish line, and with that, there's plenty of time to get all the work done prior to that.
How tough to build a staff if you don't have a head coach in place?
It can be challenging. At the same time, we've got ideas and thoughts and directions that we think we're heading, and we'll see how it comes together. But we feel good about the ideas and the thoughts and the directions that we've set to this point. There's a lot of good coaches out there, and we'll have plenty of time to add good coaches to the staff, for sure.
It's been a long time since franchise has gone through a coaching change. Were you happy with the way the process went? And
I was, yeah. You know, process is ongoing, and I'm very happy with. You know, it's a long process. It's a time-consuming process, but it's a highly important process. And, we put a lot of effort into it. Put a lot of research into it. Put a lot of thought into it, and then when it came time to execute the plan, I was happy with the way that we went about it. So it's not an easy thing, but it's something that's very meaningful for the franchise for sure.
Seems like you have a plan to, you know, you kind of touched on it with how you're looking ahead in the roster. The game's changed.
The game always evolves a little bit, but at its, you know, it's 11 on 11. You got to get your best 11 guys out there. You're going to need linemen. You need pass protection. You need run blocking. That's not going to change. And the traits you look for in players don't really change excessively. But the game does evolve, and we need to evolve a little bit with it.
Do you think this guy is going to be going to use a little more analytics?
That's to be determined. I mean, we've always used analytics. You know, that's kind of a buzzword these days. But, you know, when you look at somebody's, what we just did right there is analytics. You know, how tall is he? How much does he weigh? How long are his arms? How big are his hands? That's all analytics. So we've been using analytics for a long time. But there's a lot of different phases of that we've incorporated over the years, and we'll continue to do that. We'll provide. We'll sit down with the new staff, see what they need, what they value in terms of game plan analytics and so forth, and we'll staff appropriately for what the needs are. We'll get to that point.
It certainly seems like with the coaches that have moved on, it certainly seems like you guys are prepared to give the new guy what he needs.
We've always felt that way, you know. We'll have ideas, you know, about what's needed as well, and there's going to be an agreement on staffing levels at different positions as a group. We're not looking to bring somebody in and restrict them in any way. And so when you get a whole new staff, sometimes you get new ideas and new thoughts that are worthwhile, and that's part of the process that we're going through. Certainly welcome new thoughts and new ideas and new ways of thinking, and we're flexible to incorporate those.
All right, so there was Duke Tobin with reporters down in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. I'll give you a chance, you know, Fletcher, being in that mix. As you were listening and going, and, you know, Duke was kind of touching on a number of different topics, and you walked away, what was your biggest takeaway, that most stuck in your head from that conversation?
Well, I do think that him talking about maybe the significant, like, sea change that this represents, and I think there's a lot going on, and Duke Tobin's kind of at the center of it, just how involved he was in this process. So that segment there where he was sort of asked about, you know, what this represents with structural changes and what a young, energetic coach like Zach Taylor could represent and mean and change and influence, because this is similar to Marvin Lewis coming in 16 years ago. I mean, there's so much that came along with that. It was such a drastic change in the way things have been done. And so now I think we can potentially see similar changes of that scale now with Zach Taylor. And I'm talking about, and there's a question in there about analytics. I think that's an area that you could see a lot more hands-on things involved with, scouting, player personnel, all kinds of things. And so we'll have to see what Zach Taylor does with the guys he brings in here. But I think that Duke himself is obviously his role within the organization. I think we're seeing things are changing, and we'll have to see if that leads to success.
Yeah, you know, we have talked about this in recent weeks, and I want to keep bringing it up because I don't want it to fall off the map of importance, and that is Duke Tobin is the only non-family member in these meetings in, as a part of this search. It tells you all you need to know about how he's regarded and what his real role is within the organization. We've been saying it forever. We've been calling him de facto GM for years now. And this is the proof of it, right? I mean, this is the proof where he has been. You know, he's doing the player personnel thing. He's doing the hiring. He's a part of the hiring of the head coach thing. He's obviously, we all know, involved in the free agency discussions and trade and everything like that. That is what GMs do. He's a GM. So don't yell at me about how they need a GM. They have one. And that's part of what makes it clear, I think, is what you've seen over the last few weeks. Again, I want to repeat that because it just seems like I get sick of hearing the opposite. Until they hire a GM, blah blah blah. Well, they have. You mentioned that. We can talk a little bit about the Andy Dalton comments in there. Mm-hmm. Everyone, let's just play this out. Okay, let's play this out in our head. Let's say the Duke and his team and everybody in the front office are planning, have talked with Zach Taylor. What do you think about the quarterback situation? It's obviously going to be on your top three topics that you need to talk about if you're interviewing for this job. Okay. What do you think about Andy Dalton? What do you think about the future of the quarterback? If those discussions had landed on, well, I really think that we need to go a different direction and we should look to draft a quarterback, would you sit here and not still say, we think Andy Dalton has a lot of great years and he can win for us and blah, blah, blah? Yeah, you would still say that, right?
Right.
Wouldn't you?
I
sure you would. You wouldn't say, you know what? Funny you asked me about Andy Dalton. We really think that we're just going to make sure we get one of these quarterbacks drafted, and we are ditching that dude because he's trash, and we're just not in for that. I mean, that you're going to say what Duke said. Now, I am of the mind that I do think that they believe in Andy still. And I've been on record about that for a while. Those statements, because I don't want that stuff to get overblown. I don't want this to turn into a, no, they keep it Andy. Ah! I don't want it to be like that. I want this is what you would say, and they should still believe in him regardless of whether they are plotting for the future in this draft at number 11 overall or not at all. That they still have to be behind him. Certainly at this point, Zach Taylor isn't even in the house yet.
Well, I did hear today that there were quite a few candidates who were impressed with the Bengals quarterback situation. I hate to give you credit, Paul, because you've been saying that for some time. I think that a lot of people, that what that means to them is that I think Andy is respected, and then also, as you've pointed out many, many times, there is a clear-cut way for this to be advantageous in the short term and the long term. You know, if you just happen to fall in love with Will Greer or something like that, and he was available late, maybe in the second or third round or whatever, however it shakes out, I think there's a scenario there where Andy is vital in the short term, and then his contract status makes it advantageous for the long term as well. Or, you know, just however it shakes out, I think, as you've said many times, that this is an advantageous quarterback situation for Zach Taylor to come in here and inherit.
Or he comes in and this collection of young quarterback people and offense people are able to help Andy play like a top 10 quarterback.
Right.
Like he was doing early in the season last year before everything fell apart, including his thumb. Or, you know, I mean, so, you know, who knows? People were so mad. Every time I talk about Andy, people get so mad. So I just want people to be happy. You know, there's a lot of negativity in the air, especially in Cincinnati this past weekend. There's just a lot of people yelling and screaming, and there's a lot of hate. I don't want to bring out hate.
Hey, man.
I'm just discussing about the quarterback situation. I'm not trying to turn it into the hate draft.
Some people don't want to be happy though, Paul. And that's what makes them happy. So I get it.
Yeah. one other, so you guys heard all that. One other thing I just want to talk about, we'll get more into this next week when we will flip roles. I will be in Atlanta at the Super Bowl, and you will be back here at home. But we'll talk a little bit more about Andrew Whitworth, Rex Burkhead. You have a lot of Bengals connections when you throw in Zach Taylor and whoever else from possibly from the Rams staff might be coming with him. A lot of connections there in the Super Bowl. Watching Andrew Whitworth dominate fools for a couple of weeks and then watching Rex Burkhead run in the defining touchdowns of the Patriots' win in Kansas City, it just makes Bengals fans – it's tough. It's just tough to watch. It's like, you know, people are like, is this the closest the Bengals will get to a Super Bowl? Is getting to maybe watch Big Wit, like, hold the trophy?
Ouch.
Maybe.
Damn, dude.
I don't mean that as a knock. I'm just saying, like,
twist a knife.
No, I mean, there's a lot of connections. I'll be talking to Wit and Rex and a lot of Zach Taylor next week. So if you have questions that you would like me to ask Zach Taylor, I got time next week. So we'll have plenty of time where I'll be sitting down with the coach. So if you have something that you want to know, you just let me know. And I'll make sure we take some time to get everything that you would like to know covered. So just fire those, tweet those off. Send us emails, whatever you want, and we'll make sure we get to that with Zach next week. So that will be when I'm in Atlanta and Fletcher will be back home. For now, he gets to live the good life in our beautiful state, very well-educated state of Alabama.
Oh, come on now. I got two.
I know. It was unnecessary. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I think that Birmingham is an underrated American city. I've got two personal notes for you.
Yeah.
All right. So, as you know, once I got to this Bengals beat and started working with you, the injury bug just decimated. I think after I accepted the position was like a day or two before the Joe Mixon news came out that he was going to have surgery. And it really just after that. Well, and then once it became official, just the entire offense and some of the defense went down. So I got a new injury to report. My youngest dog, Bunk, named after a character in The Wire, has a dislocated patella. It's very serious and sad, and it just continues a run of injuries that I've had to monitor and deal with. And
what happened to Bunk?
He has a luxating patella tendon. It comes in and out of track, off the track. It happens about once or twice a day to him, and it really halts him. But he's tough. He's playing through it right now, and we're kind of weighing our options to see if we're going to do the surgery or not. So,
do we need to get Dr. Anderson in Carolina?
He needs to fly.
Guy, do we need to get him involved?
He needs to fly to Green Bay he needs to go to Green Bay for a
foot. Well, you're down near James Andrews down there in Alabama.
Yeah, so
this is your chance, Fletcher. You need to go find James Andrews and tell him, I got a dog with issues. Help me, James.
Well, I've seen a patella injury derail the careers of many high-profile athletes, so we'll see how that goes. We'll monitor that. Also, if you say Reese's, we ain't friends. I don't want to If you say
– I was just thinking about this today, yeah, about how I always used to call it Reese's Pieces and how that enraged you.
No, if you say Reese's Pieces, which all rhymes with feces, you get away from me. I'm going to defriend you.
Reese's Pieces.
I imagine there was some guy or girl, woman named Reese, and they had delicious peanut butter covered in chocolate. It is possessive. It's Reese's. I've heard Reese's said like thousands of times today and throughout my life growing up in the South, and I want all of you people to die. It's like whenever you, Look, I can't do math very well. It's obviously, that's why I'm in journalism. And one time I told somebody that, and this older man pulled me to the side. He said, "Hey, listen, don't tell people that you can't do math, because it's kind of like saying, hey, I'm kind of stupid." And I was like,
yeah,
damn, dude, that's harsh. But I mean, so I kind of keep that to myself now. Don't say don't say Reese's out loud, because it makes me think you're stupid.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I don't know what it is. It's just something where it's no one ever properly just said it to me once about how dumb it sounds to say Reese's Pieces. until you're like, oh, no, it's just Reese's Pieces. That, I mean, it obviously makes more sense. It's just if you don't hear somebody correct you to tell you the right way, you can just spend your whole life just doing it wrong. We've all got those things. We all have something in our life where you're like 33 or 24 and someone's like, you know, it's pronounced Pittsburgh, right? Or something like
that.
Where it's like something so basic where you're like, oh, yeah, I thought it was Pittsburgh, you know? No. You just need someone to just – shift you into the right lane.
I'm here. Here to shift all of you out there. Listen, no self-respecting adult says PCs, all right? It's just not a thing you need to be saying.
No, there's no doubt about that. Well, that's a good one not so good personal note, but hopefully you find Dr. James Andrews and he says, "You know what? I will look at your dog." No, and then hopefully no one ever again says Reese's around you, or you are going to explode. Perhaps we sent you to the wrong place. Inquirer reporter, Malls 4 today in Mobile, Alabama. When asked for comment, he just said, "It's not Reese's."
That's right. That's what I love about the BBP. For the hardcores that stay till the end, hashtag radon, hashtag pecans, hashtag PCs.
Hashtag find Paul's phone. Yeah, it's all here. This is where it gets weird. All right. Well, I am done. I've exhausted all the topics on my little notepad here. So unless you have you been tracking Kanye, or do you not have a Today in Kanye?
Yeah, Today in Kanye headline: Kanye West might be working on new Christian music, so get ready.
No, I'm not. I don't know how interested I am in Kanye's take on Christianity.
All right, that was from Cosmopolitan, so pretty good source.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, no doubt. Great sourcing there. All right. Well, hey, you enjoy beautiful Mobile. You know, that's all I got to say about that. Don't be careful when you go to Veet's. It's very dirty. And awful. And it's like the one bar that all the NFL people that are trying to get sloshed congregate at.
That sounds like the place I need to be.
You're like, wait, that's kind of my deal. Be careful. Just be careful in there. Just be careful when you step foot into Veet's and know it's very dirty and diseases are contracted there.
All right. Well, I'm going to put on my adult pants and see what this place is about.
All right, that sounds good. Always good to check in at Mobile. We will flip next week. Again, they'll probably be back on the Tuesday night, Wednesday morning cycle next week, because I want to make sure we bring you stuff from opening media night and the first day of availabilities after that, with Zach Taylor, with Witt, with Rex, and everything else that we end up drumming up down there in Atlanta. So look for us coming a skosh later than normal in the week, just like this one was. We wanted to make sure we got you some good stuff from Mobile. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP, and we'll talk to you next week.